This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. University of North Carolina at Greensboro has created an interdisciplinary program to memorialize important but perhaps lesser-known figures in the civil rights movement. In the process, the project is developing an archive to allow broader access to these stories. The Unsung Heroes of the Civil Rights Movement Visual History Project brings together the media studies and history departments to conduct interviews, and the university libraries make sure the public has access. Matthew Barr is co-director of the project. He's a professor in the Department of Media Studies at UNC Greensboro, an oral historian, and a documentary filmmaker. Matt, welcome back.
Oh, good to be here.
Torin Gatson is with us as well, assistant professor in the Department of History at UNCG. Hello, Torin.
How are you?
Very well. Matt, I want to find out all about how this project came together and how it works, but let's find out about the subject matter and talk about examples of some of the histories that are important but perhaps lost to us. For instance, tell us about the Reverend Curtis Brown and the story that you heard about his experience at a drinking fountain.
Well, Reverend Curtis Brown grew up in eastern North Carolina in an area with a lot of poverty, and grew up back in the bad days of Jim Crow. And when he was about 10 years old, he decided he was going to find out whether he went ahead and drank water from the whites-only drinking fountain, and felt his hand clamping his neck, and was promptly brought down to the police station and was threatened with arrest. His father showed up, and the police officer told his father basically that he should get some severe discipline for having the gall to drink from the fountain. So he was dreading this, and then when he got in the car, his father turned to him and said, "Well, did the water from the white drinking fountain taste any different?" And, you know, that was, he never got hurt. He basically from early on was not going to accept the racism that permeated his life, or, you know, the whole life around there. And, you know, went on to have, he's still a minister after over 55 years as a minister and civil rights activist in Greensboro.
Yeah, and I think the story illustrates not only, you know, obviously the depravity of Jim Crow, as you say, the bad days, the worst days, I would say, because the bad days, I'm ashamed to say, are still here. But the fact is, it also illustrates the agility and the ingenuity that it took to navigate all of that and still maintain an attitude of resistance. And I think it's a brilliant story that might have been lost otherwise. So tell us a little bit more about this project, because it started 10 years ago, right? Tell us how it got started.
It got started. I teach documentary filmmaking. I've had a longstanding interest in oral history. I showed my documentaries at the Oral History Association and basically taught a course with Dr. Chuck Bolton of the History Department at UNCG called Doing Visual History. This goes back to 2009, and the students went out and did interviews on video because, you know, the visual aspect is adds a huge amount to the oral, doing oral history. And ultimately, after that, we co-taught that course a couple times. We developed an interest in doing a project, basically finding these stories, these unsung heroes, which, you know, kind of goes to the core of oral history. History from the ground up, the soldiers, so to speak, and not the generals. So basically, we went to Hattiesburg, Mississippi, with another historian, Dr. Curtis Austin, who's the other co-director of this project. We interviewed some people in that area who had been heavily involved with the civil rights movement. That became the kind of start of the project, and it kind of continued. Well, we had other documentaries and books to do, but a couple of years ago, we started up again, and I interviewed a person named Charles Person, who was down in Atlanta, who was on the Freedom Bus Rides and was almost beaten to death. This is back in 1961 when he was only 19 years old. And, you know, we started the project up again and then ultimately got a Carnegie Mellon grant from UNCG, or that was given to UNCG, and did this project that we're talking about today with with Dr. Torrin Gatson and students and some other professors from my department, Hassan Pitts and Janita Chase. And basically, we train students to go out and do these interviews with people. Greensboro has so many people who are heavily involved with the civil rights movement, all the way back to, you know, Woolworth's counter sit-in in 1961 and forward. And so basically, it's been a wonderful project where we were able to collect interviews and then add to the ones that we've been doing. So there are 14 interviews on this archive on the site. I should mention, of course, that a couple of years ago, we got the university libraries involved with this to digitize this massive amount of material, most of which is shot on high-definition video, and to actually build an archive, which is quite a lot of work.
Well, it is, and then it makes it available to all of us. Torrin Gatson, though, if you're talking about unsung heroes, how do you find them without a song to guide you? How do you find these folks?
Well, you know, it's come through a great partnership with myself, Matthew Barr, and others, you know, locating these stories, which are there on the landscape, just looking, or rather yearning for an opportunity to speak out. And I think that goes towards the point of utilizing the students and having them go out and actively engage with these titans of the community to make sure that we store this necessary history.
Tell us more about their role, the students' role in collecting these interviews.
So the students' role is critical. It's kind of the foundation of this particular project, especially with the Mellon Grant, as Matthew mentioned. And so our students were first trained in the art of oral history by myself, and then trained in the art of leading a visual studio recording audio from the good folks in media studies. And so the students actually went out and led the entire interview from the point of making contact with the interviewee to actually recording the interview and then actually serving as the interviewer. And so from start to finish, they took a vested interest, or held a vested interest rather, in collecting these precious stories.
I'm talking with two guests from UNC Greensboro, Media Studies Professor Matt Barr and History Professor Torrin Gatson. We're talking about the Unsung Heroes of the Civil Rights Movement Visual History Project, and I want to bring one of the students into this conversation now, someone who interviewed people for the project. Atija Farmer is a UNCG graduate who majored in Media Studies and Spanish. Atija, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Tell us about, why don't we start with someone you talked with, and then I'll hear more about your involvement, but tell us about Willina Cannon.
Yeah, she was the first person we interviewed. We interviewed her at, I believe it was a church in Greensboro where she does some work at, and there's even this painting of the Greensboro Massacre, the police brutality that had taken place, but we kind of talked, and she shared her experience going through the Greensboro Massacre, seeing the violence firsthand when people were just trying to gather and help the community out, and the police brutality that took place, and then being arrested, and her experience there under, I think, City Hall Council. And it was really a great experience to hear about.
Tell us what she told you, because again, we call it the Greensboro Massacre now. You may have studied it as the Greensboro Massacre. Of course, she was going to a protest. She wasn't going to a massacre. So her experience of that must have been incredible to go to what she thought was a protest and then see all this unfold. What did she tell you?
Right. She told me she had come there and there were many people from different backgrounds. There were doctors from different places, and they just had gathered to this place and realized, I guess, from the beginning, police weren't there, so something was kind of off. They didn't pay it too much mind, but then all of a sudden, I think she started hearing shots, and people were scattering around, hiding behind buildings. Even some children were there. There was a teacher, I believe she actually passed away in the event, Sandra. That was her friend. She had come to her around the corner, and Sandra was protecting these children from getting shot, so kind of seeing this stuff firsthand, and one of her friends being arrested and choked out from the event, and then again her being arrested by herself and being taken into this interrogation room. And they were basically trying to force her to admit to some conspiracy that they had planned this event and that it was supposed to be a violent event instead of just a peaceful protest.
And, of course, the violence was by Ku Klux Klan members and pro-Nazi demonstrators who had shown up to show their resistance to a Death to the Klan rally. And police knew about this in advance. They knew they would be armed. They didn't show up and allowed the violence to continue. And that has all been on the record now. But so how much did you know about what we now call the Greensboro Massacre when you went into this project?
I had heard very little about it. I mean, at UNCG, I think that's one of the things we hear about, the Greensboro Massacre. I had really only known it as that, a massacre where I think five people had died, and that was all I knew. And then after interviewing her and hearing a firsthand experience, realizing there was so much more to the story than just a few people dying at the hands of KKK members.
What did you do? Because you're a media studies, you're studying media, right? And not a historian. But in this project, you exchange roles. Tell me how that works once the interviews begin.
Yeah, so I'm a media student, and I worked with another history student. And for this was our first one, so I got to record this. But we also came up with the questions together, trying to ask unbiased, open-ended questions so we could get the best story. And then I even got to ask my own questions at the end of the interview, so kind of getting a little more into history than I usually was and am used to.
What does that do for you? I mean, I don't know what your plans were as a media student, but having gotten involved in this project and having to study a little history to get ready to do the questions, does it change your ideas of what you're going to be doing in media? Should you pursue that career?
Oh, very much so. I was always interested in narrative stories and kind of these fantasies or creating my own stories. But, you know, after the experience, I'm really more interested in telling history, especially how it pertains to Black culture. So that's something I'd like to do in the future, kind of have my own series where I'm showcasing historical Black culture in a better light, especially with the current climate of everything going on.
And I wonder about the interpersonal part of this, too. Obviously, cultural and historical questions are critical, and understanding them critically and representing them is very important. But you also talk to a human being. You talk to Alina. What kind of connection, or if any, did you feel with her as you were doing this interview?
I think I'm mostly connected with the fact that she's a Black woman who experienced these events in her own time. And I mean, I haven't experienced what she's experienced, but being able to say as a Black woman, I can relate to her in somewhat of her experience, seeing how proud and strong she still is today is something I can definitely connect to that kind of inspires me in my own life.
Torin Gatson in the History Department at UNCG. What is the significance of these interviews, of these being visual histories, of videotaping these as well?
So I think, you know, from what we heard from Atija's interviews and what she gathered as a wealth of knowledge and how impactful it is for the community, for this to also be visual, it adds another layer and allows us to delve deeper into the conversation because, one, you're able to see those interpersonal connections, but, two, most times we often think of oral history just as the spoken word or the documented word that's eventually transcribed or written. But when you add that visual element, you truly have a more comprehensive narrative, where you add a more comprehensive narrative to the entire story. You're allowed to see the illumination. You're allowed to see many of the emotions that sometimes aren't necessarily always transposed as much as they are delivered from that interpersonal connection. So the visual aspect, you know, it just served to make a connection. And then lastly, I mean, it built a bridge because we aimed to not only store this or collect and store this vital information, but we also wanted to simultaneously educate youth and educate our budding students, both media and history budding professionals. And we were able to do that while also showcasing that through these visual aspects of recording the interviews.
Well, tell us more about that part of it, the students. Why is it important to have students connecting with people who can tell these stories firsthand?
So I think first it's important because we don't want to lose these stories that are slowly eroding from the landscape just due to natural causes and age. I think, too, though, it reinforces the necessity of students engaged in public history, whether it be in the Department of History or in media studies as far as documentaries or things, to get the word out. And it trains them to understand the principles of engaging in such actions. And then lastly, I think it really just, starts to massage the building of more bridges and more connections between what we might like to theorize as the old guard and the new and upcoming students. And so if we're able to make more of those connections, we're able to see, as a teacher mentioned earlier, that, I can see myself, maybe not fully, but I can partially see myself in you and your actions being the woman that she interviewed. And so we start to make those connections and then hopefully solidify a more robust understanding of history.
TJ, how does it affect you? You talked about it definitely giving you a new perspective as a media student, but in terms of the kind of stories that you're going to be looking for or even how to find them, starting right in Greensboro, maybe I could put the question this way. What were some of the other stories that were part of this project that you may not have been participating in, but that you heard about that also moved you?
I actually remember David Dansby. I think he had talked about this off camera, but it was this experience he had in his hometown around Greensboro, and this black man or black boy had been beaten up, and his body was burned, I think, in a barn because he had, whistled or something at this white woman, and that was just another one of these experiences or stories I couldn't even fathom in my mind, and it was just crazy to hear about and to think about. And, the fact that it only happened 30 years ago, being a younger person, thinking that's a long time ago, but realizing that's really not too far from where we are now.
Matthew Barr, tell us a little more about where these interviews and videos are going to be stored and how the public can get at them.
Well, the UNCG libraries, I want to mention also three people at the libraries who've been instrumental in making this all happen. That's David Gwynn and Aaron Larimore and Richard Cox. These are the digital and geniuses who, this thing, this site, I've learned it takes a lot of work to put together an archive. And, it's very time consuming. There's a lot of technology involved. This site also features this amazing thing called the Ohms software that allows for data mining. So you can put in a keyword, say Ku Klux Klan, and within an interview, and it will bring up in the transcript every place where that word occurs. So there's some interesting high technology that's part of it. But basically, the site went live yesterday, but it'll take another week or so to finally place it within the right in the main art website page of the library. But basically, there's a number of special collections the library has for this and other visual and oral history projects. And so, we're just at the beginning of this thing.
Well, and luckily we've got a link to it at our website as well. So I want to thank you all for being part of this project and telling us all about it. Matt Barr, media studies professor at UNCG. Torin Gatson is a history professor at the same institution. And Atija Farmer is a graduate student, again, UNCG. I want to thank you all for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You can find out more about the unsung heroes of the Civil Rights Movement Visual History Project at our website, stateofthings.org. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.